Okay, we're up to Kina Vav, 152. Page 152, Kina Vav, Shava Suru Meni Shimuni Oivarai. Okay, this Kina, if you notice, it focuses on the last eight letters of the Aleph base. You see how after the word Shavas, it's Samach. How many lines? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There are six lines. Samach. And then comes Ayin. Then comes Pei, Tzadi, Kuf, Reish, Shin, Tav. And then there's an acrostic, Elozar. Elozar. Okay, so we have over here the last eight letters of the Aleph Beis. What happened to the first 14 letters of the Aleph Beis? Where did the first 14 letters go? Now, I promise Rav Dov that he'll be able to say something. He wants to say something to the Olam, I promise you, so we have to say very, very short. Very short. Less than a minute.
I got a message in Persian by WhatsApp. Maybe it is interesting for you. He said in Chicago, short time ago, a young guy, Jewish, from person, is going to have a car accident. He hits an old man and killed. When they take him to the court, they don't think that he's responsible for him and he's not going to be charged. But he had bad feeling, nightmare, depressed, anger, and insomnia, not appetite. He cannot, what to do? Finally, he's going to send a mail to Rabbeinu Chaim Kanigsky Shlita and to ask what should we do. After a short time, we get a mail that is written one word, Amalek. When you get the mail open and see the word Amalek, he doesn't understand. What does it mean, Amalek? It's not going to give him good feeling. And after that, because in that neighborhood, he was very scary, afraid, he's going to move from that neighborhood to another place. He's going to sell his house and move from here to Manhattan, for example. And now he's going to buy a house that someone is going to sell his house. He say this house is belong to a person that was killed. I want to sell it as soon as possible. He buys the house. And after that, when going to the house, going to the basement, looking here, searching, he finds some pictures. The pictures show that this old man that was killed was soldier for SS in Hitler time. And after that, he find out a list of the Jewish people that were killed by this guy. And he looks at the list and he sees that his parents' name in this list, that he killed them. And after that, he understands that the word that Rabbeinu Chaim Kanigsky sent the Amalek, it means that he was from that group. And therefore, he got revenge on his father's parents that were killed by him. You see that we have so much Nevuah Ruach Kodesh, that one word is say the Amalek, we don't know everything, and after that he's going to have good feeling, and Hashem is going to give us the Sorot Tovot.
Wow, what a story. Unbelievable story.
It was in Chicago short time.
Unbelievable story. Okay, let's go back. We have over here Kinevav. Kinevav is the first king of the day after we finish the Haftarah. Kinevav focuses on the last eight letters of the Aleph Beis. What happened to the first 14 letters of the Aleph Beis? So the answer is, it used to be back in the day, what we say is only half of the Kina, really part of the Kina. The other part was said part of Shmone Esrei. Just like on Purim, some people are much more are familiar with this, there's a Krovetz that is recited on Purim in the middle of Shmone Esrei. Anyone ever do that on Purim?
Yes,
a Krovetz. So there was a Krovetz for Purim, and there's a Krovetz for Tisha B'Av. And before the Shliach Tzibur concluded each Beracha, the Tzibur would recite six lines. Six lines corresponding Aleph Beis, the first Beracha, and before the Shliach Tzibur would conclude, Baruch Atah Hashem Mogein Avraham, the Tzibur would recite, maybe it was in the middle of Brachas, I'm not sure it was among everyone, it could be in the middle of Brachas, whatever it was, but in the middle of the Shemona Esrei, part of the Shemona Esrei, before the Shliach Tzibur would conclude each Bracha, the Tzibur would read one letter, six lines similar to what we have over here for the Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, going all the way up to Nun. And then Shemona Esrei concluded with Kriya Satoira, the Haftoira, and now we continue where we left off. So this Kina truly is a continuation of a Kroivetz that was recited in the middle of Shemona Esrei. And that itself is a very powerful lesson, because basically what it's saying is that the person should understand that kinois are tefilois. It's not just a poem. A person can easily make a mistake and say, who needs to say kinois? Just poetry. It's just lamentations. It's not part of them. It's not something that you have to say. It's not anything special about it. No, that's a very big mistake. Kinois are expressions of prayer. And Chazal very cleverly hinted that to us by taking one kina and splitting it between Shemoneh Esrei and after Shemoneh Esrei, where now we just continue where we left off. It's very easy to understand that if you're saying something in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, it's not a kina, it's more of a tefillah. Here as well, it is a tefillah. Now, this kina, we talk about this for a very, very long time. I brainwashed myself in believing that I finally understand this kina. I never, ever understood this kina. I thought this kina makes absolutely no sense. From all the kinas, it's just a mishmash of ideas and with no theme, no continuity. But I think finally it hit me what possibly is going on in this kina. The first secret, it's not a secret, it's pretty obvious. No one talks about this, is if you look at the third line of every stanza. So we start with Shavah, say Suru. So go to the third line. What does it say in the third line? Sakoisa Mishkan Misikois Divirai. You have enveloped your Mishkan, your abode, from looking down upon my words. Okay, you've enveloped yourself. Now here, they give you a translation, but the translation is subject to a lot of interpretation. It's not the only translation. Over here in my interlinear, they have a different translation. Sakos, you have covered your heavenly tabernacle, misikoi, so as not to listen divirai to my entreaties. Okay, I don't want to go into all the details now. Page 150. Right. We read and listen to Hashem, so Hashem is now listening to us. So the point I want to make here, look at the word. The word here is the word Mishkan. Go to the next letter. Go to the next letter. Nun. Go to the third line. I'm not going to translate. Just look for the key word. Ad Pilei Gilgol. Gilgol. Mishkan Gilgol. Go to the next section, the Pays. Go to the third line. The third line of the Pays are Shiloi. Go to the next section, Tzadi. The third line is Noiv. Go to the next section. Go to Kuf, Givoy. Now go to Resh. Be'i Vuyach. Iva Lemoishav Loi. The word Iva is a code word for the Beis HaMikdash, specifically the Bayis Rishon. Go to the next expression, the shin, devir, devir kodshecha. It's a code word for the bayis sheni. The last section is tzifunecha, tzofun, tzofun. What's hidden away, this is a code word for the bayis shlishi. There were seven mikdashos. The Mishkan, Gilgal, Mishkan was 40 years. Gilgal was 14 years. Shiloi was 369 years. Noiv and Givon together was 57 years. Bayis Rishon 410. Bayis Sheni 420. a total of 1,305 years. I don't know the significance of that number. There must be significance, but for a total of 1,305 years, we were zoicha to have in our midst a mikdash where the Shechina was resting. And now we are awaiting Tzifu Necha. Now, each one of these abodes was taken away from us. Now, some of them were clearly destroyed. Shiloh was destroyed. Korban, the Pelishtim. Noiv the Givon were destroyed. Noiv, Shol HaMelech himself was the one who destroyed Noiv, Irak Oihani. The Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni. And what about the Mishkan and Gilgal? It doesn't say anywhere the Mishkan was destroyed, Chas V'Shalom. But the Mishkan came to an end. When Klal Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael, the Mishkan came to an end. It was set up, a new structure was set up in Gilgal. It could very well be it was the same structure as the Mishkan itself was set up, but it was not the same. There was the Madrega, the intensity of the Kedusha was diminished. And the Mamari Chazal that support this, that because Yaakov Avinu bowed down to Esav seven times, that's why we lost seven Mikdashas. Chazal seemed to say that it was a loss to go from the Mishkan to Gilgal. Each section, I believe, I can't prove this to you and I didn't spend the time on it, but I believe that if we would spend the time researching and studying and analyzing the language and the words used in each section, it would be referring to a very specific time. When you'll focus, let's say, on the letter Lamed, I'm telling you the letter Lamed, let's say letter Tzadi, just argument's sake, letter Tzadi. Okay, it's Noiv. Everything that it says there in the letter Tzadi is a reference to the Tekufa of Jewish history when there was a Mishkan called Noiv. Noiv Ir HaKoyhan. And there were issues, there were problems. And the description of what it says in these lines is unique to that time period where the Paiton is saying these were the issues of the day, what they dealt with. And unfortunately, this particular structure was either destroyed or came to an end. So when you read these, you don't look, you know, a lot of the Farshim, they take words and they just search the whole Tanakh and they try to go and find a story here, a story there, and make sense. When you do that, it's very unsettling. It's very unsettling because you're all over the place. You're jumping around Jewish history from the beginning of time to the end of time, going backwards, forwards. You're not focused on a time period. But when you limit each stanza to a very specific tekuf of Jewish history, and the issues, it fits. I think some there. I'm not going to go through now some examples, but some of the language, the words that are unique to each section is unique to that time period of when this particular structure stood. The last one is really describing then, according to this idea, the struggle that we have to bring the Bayis Shlishi. So you look at the last one of the last one, the letter Tav is referring to Tzifu Necha, the Bayis Shlishi. Who's holding us back? We're now in Golus Edom. And indeed, a lot of the language that's used over here is indeed very unique to Edom. Toshiv lohem gumul. Punish them. Who are we asking Hashem to punish? According to this interpretation, Edom. Edom is the one that's preventing us from bringing the Bayis Shlishi. Or you want to say it's Yishmael. Edom / Yishmael. Give them what they deserve. Ka'os chazois panecha. Similar, this is, everything is subject to interpretation. Like back in the old days when Hashem punished our other enemies. Pursue them into the shadows of darkness. Those people that are planning and plotting away today. There are people out there in the world, in Iran and other parts of the world. They're planning and plotting away to cause us harm. We're speaking to the dar, this dar. Titein laha, yeah?
The term tirdof suggests tirdof ba'af.
Mitach Hashmei Hashem, Edoim, and Echanami. That goes to prove the point. the beauty of saying this, of focusing on this idea, is that you don't have to go and search Jewish history from beginning to end. If we limit each stanza to a specific time period, which is highlighted by the word that is selected, then we limit ourselves to a very specific time period in Jewish history, and indeed, a lot of the words stand out, they fit to that particular period. Titein lahavev noisit seif v'ninecha, burning, consign or give over to burning, to fire, those people who smash your precious gems, tikul l'shakiram kois kamus b'finecha, the kois hatareila, that will be given to the enemies at the end of days, over here referring to Edom. Now, then is very interesting. Then comes another stanza, Elazar. Okay, we have an acrostic. After it's all over, Elazar. Now, I want to say suggest a chiddush. Elazar, interesting. Elazar Hakalir. Who wrote this kina? Elazar Hakalir, as well as most of the kinas were written by Rabbi Elazar Hakalir. Over here, he put his name, Elazar, which is very common. That's what the Pythonim did. They have acrostics for their name here and there. But here, it's interesting the position that his name comes after we go over the letters of the Aliphase, and being that it comes at the time of the building of the Bayis Shlishi, Chazal tell us it's not going to be easy to live in the time of Ikvasud b'Mashicha. Oy, mi yichya mi sumoikel. Woe to the person that will be present at the time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he comes down upon this world to punish his enemies and bring Gula for Klal Yisrael. It's a day of reckoning for everyone. It's not a simple thing to be alive, to witness Bias HaMashiach. Moshe Rabbeinu had two sons, Gershon and Eliezer. Eliezer has a yud. Let's not make any mistake. Eliezer has a yud. Elazar does not have a yud. Elazar HaKalir is a different name, but they're very close. And the name Eliezer, the Torah tells us, the reason why his name is Eliezer, ki Elokei Avi Be'ezri, Vayatzileni Micheres Paro. We've gone through Jewish history. We're now holding at the letter Tav. We're holding at the time where we're yearning for Tzifu Necha. We're yearning for Tzofon, at the Haggadah, the end of the Haggadah. We're yearning for the coming of Mashiach. But the coming of Mashiach, Rabbi Isai, is not easy. The Ikvisa de Mashicha is the Tsar Chevle Leida. It's painful. And in this time, our enemies are trying very hard to prevent it from happening. And if it's one line that we need to make use of, this one expression that we need to make use of to be misfala for in these times, it's Elokei Avi Be'ezri. May it be that the God of my forefathers, may he be Be'ezri. Vayatzileni mecherev parah, may he save us from the churban that's going on out there in the world. And it's not an accident, it's not just an acrostic that Elazar here refers to Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. There's more depth. We're holding here, Ikvas the Mashicha. We need Elokei Avi the Ezra. Okay, let's go now to the next kina. Kina Zion is a beautiful kina. I think it's a mistake. It's a typo. Those letters there, it's a typo.
That's what I fixed.
Nothing more than a typo. That's there's no hocus pocus there. No Inyoni Kabbalah. Okay,
is
whatever
there,
happened.
Is there the consensus of whether he's a Tana or he's a
Okay, there's a big discussion. It's a big mystery when he lived, who he was. The opinions, they range from the time of the Tana, from Rashbi's son. Rabbi Eliezer, who went into the cave, he ranges from that time all the way until he cannot have lived later than Rashi, because Rashi quotes him, and Rashi died in the year 1140, 1105. So Rashi died 1105. There's no way the Kalir could have lived later than 1105 if Rashi is quoting the Kalir. Mm-hmm. Okay, Rashi quotes him almost as if that he already died, it appears. So therefore, Rashi, the Kalir lived in the was from the very early Rishonim or lived during the time, like the tail end of the Goinim, it appears. Something like that. It cannot pass that. Where did he live? It's not clear. Did he live in Eretz Yisrael? We tried to study the Kinos to see, get a taste where he lived. He did not compose the Kinos for the second day Rosh Hashanah, which would indicate that he lived in Eretz Yisrael when it was only one day. But even who says it was only one day in Eretz Yisrael? Okay, this is not a topic for now. It's a very, very big topic of discussion. Why? What is he called? What's Kalir? What does that word mean? It means a cake. There are a lot of stories. There are legends about the Kalir. I really don't know. It's a whole topic in of itself. But whenever he lived and he wrote this kina. Okay, let's go to Kina Zanya.
I just want to say that in the more Jewish Shul see, which we say by Chanukah, which also refers to the goals, the last one, it says, the very last line, Dechei Admon B'Sel Salmon.
Exactly where B'Chol said, right. You see the same idea, Dechei Admon B'Sel Salmon is the same exact thing as to push away Tirdoif L'Tzalmon. Dechei Admon is very, very good. It's similar to the most we're referring to Edom. Okay. Okay, let's now go to, we made a deal. We made a deal. Okay, let's now go to Kina Zion. This kina is an incredible command language. It's just remarkable. The Kalir's, he's showing off. He's showing off an incredible command of the language by writing these lines. Every single word begins with the letter Aleph, and is in this frustration. How can you be so swift to deliver in the hands of the Adoimim, your faithful people, Klal Yisrael, v'lo zacharta, you did not remember B'ris Ben Absarim, asher berarta l'livchunech, you did not remember the B'ris Ben Absarim. Okay, then the theme of the Kina is almost, many of the Kinas go through the Aleph base, but they usually have a theme, a motif to them as well. And here the motif of this Kina, besides the incredible
Zayin,
besides the incredible command of the language and expression, it focuses on a complaint that we have to Hashem. V'loy zocharta. Where are you, Hashem? What happened to you? You did not remember. We mentioned over here, I think, 13 different glorious events of Jewish history. 13 events are mentioned here. No, I'm sorry, 11. 11 events. Okay, 11. There are 11 different events that are mentioned. And we complain, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why did you not remember? What are they? Some of them include the Bris Ben Absarim, Kfitzas Aderech, Aliyah L'Regel, Matan Torah, the fact that you took us on Kanfei Nishadim, Nasa V'Nishma. There are more. We complain, why, Hashem, did you not remember? So I want to suggest a similar answer. So that's it. The Python, the Kalir, he leaves it hanging. He does not tell us why Hashem did not remember us. So just a little bit of a drush, why Taka, what's the answer to the question? Why did Hashem indeed not remember all of these beautiful events in Jewish history and these should have served as a zechus, as a reason for Hashem not to bring us, to send us into Galus? There's a mitzvah we do every single day, we put on tzitzis. And when we put on tzitzis, the Pasuk says, Re'isimus olu zechartim es kol mitzvois Hashem v'asisim oisam. To remember all of the mitzvahs. But yet the halacha is, you can go your entire life and never put on a pair of tzitzis. You have no obligation to put on the tzitzis and thus bring yourself into a state of remembering all of the mitzvahs. Why is that so? Because the mitzvah tzitzis is only if you happen to be wearing a garment that has four corners. But if you so choose, don't put on a garment that has four corners. And if you don't wear a garment that has four corners, you have absolutely no obligation to be mekayim the mitzvah of tzitzis. And thus, you'll have no obligation to remember all of the mitzvahs.
But when did the concept of wearing the talus begin?
That began from the Gemara. Well, that began, first of all, ancient...
Moshe Rabbeinu, didn't he say he wrapped himself?
Yeah, that's right. He wrapped himself in like a shliach tzibah. Hashem wrapped himself. Hashem wrapped himself in a shliach. Hashem put on a talis. That's exactly the point. He's saying something excellent. He's saying something that is... I didn't realize what you just said opened up my mind to something that is really, really amazing. Let me explain. He really touched upon something really fantastic. A Jew has absolutely no obligation to put on tzitzit, to be mekayim in the midst of tzitzis. Absolutely not. There are things you must do whether you like it or not. But not that. There's no obligation. There's no obligation on a talis. The halacha is, if you happen to be wearing a garment that has four corners, oh, now it triggers an obligation to put on the tzitzis. Once you have the tzitzis, oh, now you have to look at them. And when you look at them, kol mitzvos Hashem. You basically, you can go live your whole life and you'll never come into a situation where you have to remember all of Hashem's mitzvahs. It's only if you're wearing tzitzis. Tzitzis, you only have to wear if you have a garment that's four corners. So the Gemara says it's right, so don't wear a four-corner garment. But the Gemara says that's not a good idea. It's a good idea for a person to put himself, to go out of his way and to put himself in this situation. Put on a garment that has four corners. And thus, obligate yourself to put on the tzitzis. And thus, you'll come to remember all of Hashem's mitzvahs. So, the mitzvah of tzitzis is unique in that we're going out of our way to seek an opportunity that's not in front of us in order to come to remember all of Hashem's mitzvahs. But without seeking out that opportunity, there is zero obligation for us to remember all of Hashem's mitzvahs. We must create the situation where we will come to remember Hashem's mitzvahs. The Ribbono Shel Olam behaves mida k'neged mida. Hashem is our shadow. Hashem responds to us the same way we respond to Him. If we decide that we're not interested in creating for ourselves opportunities to serve Hashem, if we live a life where every mitzvah is just an obstacle and we have to find the legal loophole how not it should not get in our way, then it's very simple. We don't put on a garment of four corners, we don't wear tzitzis, we don't remember anything. Then the Ribbono Shel Olam behaves in that measure. Hashem says, I have no obligation to remember all of your good merits. I have no obligation to remember Nasa v'Nishma Matan Torah, to remember the Bris Ben Abasarim. I have to remember? I don't have to remember. If we, on the other hand, seek out opportunities to serve Hashem, to create opportunities where they don't exist, then the Ribbono Shel Olam behaves mida k'neged mida. He looks for opportunities to remember Nasa v'Nishma, to remember the Bris Ben Abasarim, to remember the glorious moments of Jewish history. The Ribbono Shel Olam behaves mida k'neged mida. Mr. Mirzel, you just said something brilliant, because now, what's the deeper meaning in that when Hashem came to teach Moshe Rabbeinu the Yud Gimel Midos Rachamim, Nis'atef Betalis Kishliach Tzibur. The Ribbono Shel Olam, he put on a four-cornered garment. Why? So he should put on tzitzis, have an obligation to put on tzitzis. So he should remember our merits. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu was nis'atev kishliach tzibur with the talis, the Ribbono Shel Olam was coming to seek out opportunities to remember us. That's the answer to the question of the Kalir. V'loy zocharta. You know why Hashem didn't remember us? Because we did not seek out opportunities to remember Him. If we would seek out opportunities to remember HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would seek out opportunities to remember us. It's not, remembrance is not something which happens by itself. Okay, that's my drush for Zayin. Ches. A'ade adchuk shemayim a'ale. If only I can soar to the heavens, I would lament, I would cause the heavens to lament with me. Or I would curse Yoy Machlivi Paman, the day on which I was destroyed twice, the Bayeshvishn, the Bayeshani Tishvav. As Oinin, I would complain, I would lament, Mi Yitain Roy Shimayim. Okay, there are many Perushim what this means. Okay, we don't have much time, we have to go very quickly, but basically over here there's a motif. The motif here is the word Mi Yitain. Over here, we say over and over the word me. Me, each stanza concludes with the word me. There are 13 of them, rabbis. 13 of them that conclude with the word me. There's only one that does not have the word me. I tell you, but there are 12. There are 12 stanzas. There are 11 that have the word me. I gotta get my numbers right. There are 11 that have the word meat, but there's only one that mysteriously does not have the word me. Which one is that? It's towards the end. My strength coming to my assistance. Tarti, I yearn to see. I yearn to see. My nation every year says, this is the year when Mashiach will come. Ayada lakol ki muda, zois, I shall make known its coming to everyone. I will make it known, universally known. Imloi ki, in this stanza, the word me is replaced with the word ki. It is certain. Imloi ki is an expression which means that it is absolutely certain. Kiyar Hashem osis zois, that it is only the Yad Hashem that will bring the Geula, will bring Mashiach. Question is, why did the Kalir, did he deviate from his motif, his style, by concluding every stanza with the word ki? And here, there's a shift that it says the word imloi ki, it is certain. So Rav Simcha Soloveitchik here in the Kotel around the corner told me an incredible, incredible var, blew my mind. And that the answer is this kina. He said, you say every Rosh Chodesh, Birchas Rosh Chodesh, Shabbos Mevarchim, Mi she'osa nisim lavoisenu v'go'al oisa me'avdos l'cherus, hu yigal oisanu b'karev. Why do we shift from the word Mi she'osa nisim lavoisenu to who, he, we directly address Hashem, who yigal oisanu b'karev. And the answer he gives is, at the time of the revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the time of the coming of Mashiach, will be so intense, will be so open and awesome, it will make the revelation that we experience, the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim, to be abstract. It was me, the one. We don't address Hashem directly, we address Hashem in an abstract form. The one, She'osa Nisim. Who is the one? Well, got to think about it. Who was the one that did miracles for Klal Yisrael? Did you actually see Hashem do the miracles? Did you see Hashem? Zekeli v'anveyu? Well, of course it was Hashem. Of course it was the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ani v'lo malach, ani v'lo shliach. But compared to the revelation of the Ribbono Shel Olam in times of Mashiach, that's only a me. It's abstract. Times of Mashiach, who? It's direct. He will redeem us. That is exactly what's happening here in this kina. We are describing all of our problems. We are describing, we're playing with this idea that we've suffered so much. If only we can go back and we can redo, we can correct our mistakes, and things could have been better, things could have been different. And we use the word me. But when it comes to the geula, eyalusi li ezrasi tarti chazois, I yearn to see my strength come to my salvation, the Ribbono Shel Olam to reveal himself and bring Mashiach. Ayumasi b'chol shana imeres hi, hashana hazois, this is the year of Mashiach. Here we don't say the word me. The word me is not appropriate. Here we, Merames, it's going to be who? It's going to be a direct revelation. Ayada lakol ki muda zos imloi ki. It is certain. It is clear. It is clear ki yad Hashem osis zos. So that is an idea in this kina. The shift between the word me that appears at the end of each stanza and the mysterious omission of the word me in this stanza to the word ki. Let's go to Kina Tess. Kina Tess is Echi.
What does it mean before the end? Should be the end.
The end? It's in the middle. Okay, I don't know. I know, because we have to go back. Okay, I can't answer. I don't know. A lot of things. It's a lot of depth. It's a rhetorical, yes, it's a rhetorical question. You are correct. But there is, the Kalir is playing with our minds. There is something else.
Right. It should have been the end. The end.
You are correct. It should have been. That's the climax. But that's the derech of the Mekoinen. Mekoinen is he goes backwards. He alludes to his. He brings out. It's very common in all the kinos that after he says his main thrust, he comes back to cry a little bit more and to mourn a little bit more. It always appears that when you're reaching a climax and you got the main point has been reached, but he winds down by going back to the misery that we still find ourselves in. That's very, very common in all of the kinos. Okay, next, kinotes. Echa tsefarti meiro mei ra a shoysai hishlichu uchaneki siyakava tsamlichu. In this kino, what we do is we focus on the toichicha in parshas bichu koisai. How can the Kadosh Baruch Hu from he has cast down from my head my crown? My glory has been taken away. The glory here refers to the Beis HaMikdash. This is the crown of Klal Yisrael. And how could it be that we have been so foolish to allow a tzelem to be positioned in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Heichal? How could this happen? Okay, we go on, describes all the old different expressions. We can't go through every detail, not that I know them anyway. But over here, the motif of this kinar focuses on the toichicha. If you look at the end of each stanza, the gam, the nam im bichukosai teilechu, chayle v'nasati gishmichem bi'itam. Okay, the toichicha first begins with blessings. Before the toichicha shifts into the harsh expressions, it starts off with blessings. V'hisiglechem da'yesh espotzir, there'll be an abundance, you'll be busy in the harvest from one season to the next. V'nasati shalom aretz, v'radatim esayvechem, v'radatim mikem chamishameya, and then, towards the end, it begins, v'im loy sishmohu, v'im bichu kosai timosu, I'm going to bring harm upon you. I'm going to show my anger. And we take the words of the Toichacha and we build upon them, we elaborate upon the words of the Toichacha. Okay, so that is the major theme of this kina, is to focus on the words of the Toichacha. That was just one point we want to make. It's a very similar idea, and that is the Toichacha begins with the Im Bichukosai Teilechu. Rashi and Chumash tells us, what does it mean, the Im Bichukosai Teilechu? Shetiyu Ameilim B'Torah. You shall toil in the study of Torah, the appreciation of the Chashivus of Torah. This is a central theme of Kinos. To walk away from Kinos with a renewal of your commitment to be machshiv, to appreciate the importance of the study of Torah, the support of Torah, the value that Torah plays in our lives. Why do I say that? Because that's the question of the Haftorah. In the Haftorah, we read that Yirmiyah HaNavi, Hashem says, pose the question, Alma Avda Haaretz. Why was the earth destroyed? Why was there a Chorban? And the question was asked to the Nevi'im, and was asked to the Talmidei Chachamim, and was asked to the Malachim, and was asked to every living creature in this world. And no one was able to put their finger on the key issue. No one was able to define the core, the real reason why the Chorban happened. And at the end of the Haftarah, Hashem says, I'll tell you why. Al she'ozvu es Torah. You have abandoned my Torah. And Chazal tells us, what does it mean you have abandoned my Torah? Shloi beruchai ba Torah techila. You did not make a bracha before you studied Torah. And there are many interpretations as to what that means, but the basic common denominator of all the interpretations is there was a lack of appreciation for the study of Torah. That's the Haftarah. I mean, what more could you possibly say? That's what it's all about. The kinos is nothing more than an elaboration on the Haftarah. And if the Haftarah, with the focus, the theme is Al Ozves Torah, Yishle Berchu Ba'Torah Tchil, there's lack of appreciation that you do not make a brach on learning of Torah, that's what this kin is all about. The kin is about the Teichacha. And the Teichacha opens up with one sentence that says it all. Im Bechu Koisai Teilechu. If you will be a Meilim B'Torah, you will appreciate the value and the study of Torah, everything will be good. If you're not going to appreciate Rachman Litzdon, we go through the entire Torah, we expand upon that. Okay, now we go to Kina Yud. Echa Yoshva Chavatzelis Hashoroin. Okay, very straightforward. Kina, there are 24 stanzas, and Chazal tell us that in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohanim were divided into 24 Mishmarais. Every Mishmar, they would alternate every week, they would switch. That meant that each Mishmar would serve approximately twice a year. Okay, so there are 52 years weeks in the year, and if you serve only every 24 weeks, so you're serving, that's 48, so approximately you're serving twice. A Mishmar was on duty to arrive and to be present in the Beis HaMikdash 2 weeks a year. Each Mishmar was further broken down into six Bati Avos, which meant that a person would only serve 2 days a year. Shabbos, they would come together. On Yom Tov, they would all come together. And if a person wanted to bring a private carbon, he can do it on his own. But basically, to serve, where you were obligated to serve, Klal Yisrael was, you were part of one of 24 Mishmaris. In this Kina, we mourn that the Kohanim who were part of these 24 Mishmaros, they all lived in their own independent cities. There were 24 cities of Kohanim, and each city was called by a different name. Each Mishmar had a unique name. And in this Kina, we reflect upon the 24 Mishmaros of Kohanim, the 24 cities of Kohanim, and the Kina here mentions a particular sin which was the cause for their each particular family's chorban. And that's what we do. We mention, we focus on the tsar we have over the loss of the Kohanim. Chanukah is really a miracle, is a holiday that is devoted to the Kohanim. Haneros halal shonam alikim, al anisim v'al neflois, shasol ha-seidu, but we first begin, Haneros halal kodesh ein, Ein Rishus, but we mentioned there Al Yidei Koyhanecha HaKedoshim. The Haneris Lalu begin by making mention of the Koyhanecha HaKedoshim. It was the Koyhanim's Beis HaMikdash. And their Churban, the Churban for the Beis HaMikdash, affected the Koyhanim much, much more so than it affected the average Jew. The average Jew had his field, had his ox, had his laptop, smartphone, and bitcoins. But the Kohanim did not have bitcoins. They did not have the latest Android or iPod. All they had was the Beis HaMikdash. And with the Beis HaMikdash, they felt the suffering that much more. And here we devote a kina devoted to the Churban of the Kohanim. There's a lot more, but we're going to have to go further for now. Running out of time. Yud Aleph. Ayikaydin Yir Miyahu Al Yoshiyahu. This is, according to some, the most important kina of the day, where the Navi and the Melech meet. It's a very powerful kina in that we synthesize, we unite the Navi and the Melech. Time of Chazal, time of the Nevi'im, there was a lot of friction between the Malchus, the role of Malchus, and the role of the prophets. We find more often than not than the prophets giving Musar to the office of the Malchus. It was a very difficult time. This kina is very refreshing. It's very sad that we focus on the death of Tzidkiyahu, which we'll discuss in a moment, but yet, the one that is eulogizing the Melech Tzidkiyahu, is the Navi, Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu was the Navi of the Churban. Tzidkiyahu, to a large degree, was the Navi, the last Melech of the Churban. There were 22 more years until the Churban actually happened. And there was Yehoyakim, Yehoyachin, Yehoyochas, and Tzidkiyahu. But those kings was just a spiral downwards. Those kings were not, they were not, the significance of those kings were not, it was just a closing up shop for those kings. Tzidkiyahu, Yoshio was the last Melech which really led Klal Yisrael in the leadership role of trying to guide them in a way that would prevent the Churban from happening. And here he tragically dies, and the Navi declares about the Melech that he was a tzaddik. What happened, to make the story was, where the time of Yoshiyahu, he inherited the Malchus from his father and his grandfather, Menashe and Amon, who were Rishoyim. There was terrible ignorance, terrible worship of idols at this point in time. And Yoshiyahu, he changed the tide. He initiated the greatest Baal Teshuvah movement in history. He appointed inspectors to come into everyone's home and to make sure they had a kosher home. No avodah zarah. And you can imagine what else they came to check for. Make sure your food is kosher, your pots and pans are kosher, and make sure your internet is filtered. They checked for everything. And therefore, Yoshiyahu, by bringing Klal Yisrael to a very high madrega of doing teshuvah, he believed, it would appear, that they were very close to the times of Mashiach. And that's why when he got a message from Paro Necho asking permission to pass, to travel through Eretz Yisrael on his way up north, northeast, to the kingdom of Ashur to wage battle against them, Yoshiyahu said no. It says in the Torah, Cherev Lesavar biartzechem, afilu cherev shel sholem. He denied Paroi Nechoi passageway through the Holy Land. Yirmiyahu Hanavi and Chulda Hanaviyah told him, you're making a very big mistake. We're not holding times of Mashiach, and therefore the people are not such tzaddikim as you think they are. They're sinning secretly behind closed doors, and therefore don't get carried away. Let Paro Necho passed through the land. You don't need this problem. He did not listen. Paro Necho came out anyway against his will to pass through the land. Yoshiyahu tried to prevent him, and Yoshiyahu was killed in battle. They shot into his body 300 arrows. He died a horrible death. The Mekina here says, similar to the death of a Rasha Achav. And Yirmiyahu goes to the battlefield and is present at the last moments of the life of Yoshiyahu, and he hears Yoshiyahu confess and say, declare, Tzadik Hu Hashem. Okay, so that's the basic story. The nechama of this kina is how they come together. The Navi hears together with the Melech. We discussed this last week, where Yoshiyahu did really know that Klal Yisrael was not holding on a very high level. How do we know that? Because it was Yoshiyahu who was Goynez, the Oroin HaKodesh. The Rambam tells us that when Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, he built special passageways, special cavities, special tunnels to hide the Oroin and the Klei HaKodesh in case it would come a point in time when the Churban would come. The one who activated that emergency plan was none other than Yoshiyahu. So Yoshiyahu was very well aware of the reality that the Jewish people are not holding by the times of Mashiach. He could not possibly have put into motion this emergency plan of putting away the Kalim in these secret tunnels, in secret hiding, if he did not sense that something was horribly wrong. So obviously he knew that Klal Yisrael was not holding in the times of Mashiach. But yet, we discussed last week, Yoshiyahu still wanted to prevent Paro Necho from coming. We extended that point, we're not going through now. It's a matter of, just because you're in Golus, doesn't mean you have to live with a Golus mentality. You have to have your eyes up high. You have to have a little Jewish pride. He made a mistake. Let's make no mistake about it. He made a big mistake. He was killed for his mistake by not listening to the Navi. But just because he made a mistake, his mistake was an action in implementing his ideas that the goyim don't have a right to step on us. But a machshava, in thought, v'cherev loisavar b'yartzechem, just because I put the Aron HaKodesh in Geniza and I know the Churban is coming, you have to... Don't live with a Golus mentality. Just because a Jew goes into Golus, a Jew should not feel defeated. A Jew has to have pride. Who he is. He made a mistake. He went too far with this idea. He lost his life because he disobeyed the Navi. But the idea is there. You cannot deny that this idea is a very powerful idea of, don't step on me just because I'm going into Golus. A Jew is a Jew. A Jew represents the Am Hashem. We're running out of time. We're running out of time. We're running a very, very quick point.
Yeah, the Gemara
Okay, there are many opinions regarding this matter. There's a machlokes. They're conflicting midrashim, but the Rambam writes. I cannot deny what the Rambam says that the Shlomo Melech built these cavities and Yoshiyahu put into motion this plan. It was put in Geniza in a special tunnel in a special hiding place. You're right. There's another Chazal that says. There are different stories in the Chanami. There are different, the conflicting Memori Chazal. Let's go to Kinyan Beis. Kinyan Beis talks to Ahli Asher after. What is the theme? Ulama Lenetzach. We discussed this yesterday. The theme over here, there are different ideas. Number one is Ahali. We keep on focusing on the fact that the Mishkan is called a tent. Is a tent. What is a tent? A tent is a very delicate structure. A tent is flammable. A tent is not a steel building which has sprinklers and fire alarms. It's a very delicate structure.
Portable,
but it's delicate. Klal Yisrael has to realize that the Beis HaMikdash, don't take the Beis HaMikdash for granted. Klal Yisrael does not behave, it's just an oihel, it's just a tent. It can easily be destroyed, easily be ignited. That's one idea that we keep on coming to mention this kiddush. Another idea we mentioned the kiddush is the word Lama Lonetzach. Lama Lonetzach is the end of the last, the second, the third to last pasuk in Eicha. Lama Lonetzach, there Hashivim Hashem Elohim Ben Hashuva, Im Katzaf Tuleinu Adma. So we discussed yesterday the idea that Yirmiyahu HaNavi, he starts off by saying, Lama Lonetzach, why Hashem have you abandoned us forever? But then Yirmiyahu HaNavi becomes hopeful, and he's Mispalel Hashivim Hashem Elohim Ben Hashuva Chadeshim En Hikedem. And then what happens? He says, I see Hashem, you have rejected my prayer. Ki Mo'ois Me'astanu. You have rejected my prayer. And Yirmiyahu leaves off Megillas Eicha on a very sour note that Hashem, you don't listen to my davening, my prayer. When we recite Eicha, we repeat his prayer. And we discussed this yesterday. Why? Because we come Mikoyach, the Anshei Knesses HaGadoyla. Moshe Rabbeinu Sorkel HaGadol HaGibar VeHanayra. Yirmiyahu deleted the word VeHanayra. Goyim, Mikarkarin, B'Mikdoshai, the Goyim are frolicking about in Hashem's Mikdosh. Ayei Noiro Yisof. Anshei Knesses HaGadoyla said, Hein Hein Noiro Yisof. The fact that we still survive. They had the benefit of 500 years of survival. Hashem did indeed answer our prayers. So when we end off Eicha with Hashivein Hashem Elohim Nashuva, we don't come Midin Yirmiyahu, we come Mikoyach the Anshei Knesset HaGadoyla. That is exactly what is happening in this Kina. In this Kina, we spend the whole Kina focusing on, we give up. Lomo Lonetzach, Ki Mo'os Me'astanu. And then the very end is fascinating. The very last section is unbelievable what it says. Ochar Vokede Mipoy Mipoy. We've suffered, subject to interpretation, from Ochar in time, later in time, Vokedem, early in time, Mipo, our suffering goes from one part of the world to the other part of the world. And the suffering of the Jew fills up time and space. L'chol dar v'dar noida kitzbay v'chupay, but yet, in every generation where Hashem lets it know that He's angry at us, at the same time, chupay, He protects us. Almeh mikol oim shos olai kapay. Every generation, Hashem, He puts His hand upon us. That expression means two things. He hits us, He punishes us, but He protects us. Like by Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem says, Hine mokoy miti, and I'll pass, and what's the Pasuk Rabbi Yeskin? I'll put my palm upon you. Before that's the end, but I'll put my palm up, but v'sakoisiyas kapi, v'sakoisiyas, I'll shelter you with my calf. So even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes us, at the same time He protects us. How could that be? What's the pshat? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps on punishing us, but He preserves us? The Python answers, Zois ba'alil, it's certain. Kifid chokuk b'chapoy. Now, fid is a very hard word to translate. It simply means my doom, my destruction, my. But fid also alludes to the word my pidyoin, my redemption. It's because it is certain, even though Hashem wants to punish us for our averos, my redemption is written in the palm of His hand. The geula is imminent. Rifuasi betucha, it is certain that Hashem will heal me. Kirega biapa, his anger will only last a moment. Viarata, but until that time, point in time, I still have to suffer Hashem's anger, and I have to walk around in a cloud of darkness. So the end of the kingdom basically is coming to express the idea of the Anshei Knesses HaGadolah. Although Yirmiyah can complain and say, Lama lo netzach, ki ma'os me'as tanu, and Yirmiyah ends off Eicha by saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has forgotten about my prayer, but the Anshei Knesses HaGadolah have told us when you finish Eicha, you should say, Hashiveinu Hashem Elecha v'nashuva, Chadesh Shemeinu ki kedem, because we have a new perspective. We survived all of these years. Our survival is nothing other than Noira. Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibar, Hanoira. And that's exactly what it says over here in these last couple of lines of the Kina. We describe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has preserved us. And the fact that He has preserved us, it's not true, Lama lo netzach. It's not true, Ki ma'os me'astanu kotzavtaleinu ad ma'od. The MS is, like the Anshei, Knesses HaGedoyla, Hashiveinu Hashem Elecha v'noshuva Chadei Shemenu Kikadem. Okay, next, yeah.
In this book of it, we say, Al Shivtecha v'sha'atecha, Hemi Nachmoni. The stick is both. The stick is to hit us.
But it's to protect us. Protect us. Okay, let's go very quickly over here. We're not going to do too much drusha. Let's just focus on what the themes are. We'll probably do a little more tomorrow. Eikoi is a very popular kina. There are 12 different questions. What happened to the koi, the glorious kois, including koye zaracha, vani v'hana nelcha at koi, im koyoy mara kudim yesicholecha, vayithen koi v'koi, okay, there are, we select, b'birchos kehanim koi sivorchu es b'nei Yisrael, the Python, the mekoinen selects 12 very beautiful expressions of koi that are found in Nach. And he asks, what happened, Hashem? What happened to the kois? And obviously the word eikoi is a play on the word eicha. We take eicha and we break it into two, into eikoi, and we mourn what happened to the kois. Okay, that's the theme of Yud Gimel. We have to go further, we're running out of time. Kino Yudalit. Kino Yudalit discusses the idea that Hashem knew, it was bashert, that there would be a Churban. It's very hard to understand this kino. What is this all about? Is that the Churban was meant to be. This touches upon the greatest contradiction in Yadus. How can it be that we believe that Hashem knows the future, and yet we still have free will? That's what this kina is all about. That we have free will, we have no one to blame for the Churban than ourselves. It's purely our fault. Make no mistake about it. But yet it was meant to be. How do you understand that? That's very tough. That's something which is very hard to grapple with. And that's exactly what this kina does. It makes mention of all the various sources in Tanakh where it was foreseen in advance by the Avos and by Adam HaRishon, that it was by the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, that it was meant to be the Churban would happen. And it's all part of a process of refining us to build the Bayis Shlishi when there will no longer be a Churban. Now we come to Kina Tezvav. Kina Tezvav is the longest Kina. It's the Kina that everyone loves to skip because it's super duper complex and it's extremely long. Very, very hard Kina. I want to just tell you one short var. The Kina over here dwells upon, it's a very sophisticated extraction from the third parak in Eicha. The third parak in Eicha was composed by Yirmiyah in response to Yehoyakim burning in the fire Megillas Eicha. Yehoyakim did a terrible aveira. Yirmiyah Hanavi, he wrote three parakim. He wrote three chapters, chapter 1, 2, and 4 of Eicha. Three chapters, 1, 2, and 4. And he presented it, not directly, but it was presented to the king Yehoyakim. Yehoyakim, you know, maybe you should do teshuva. You should cut out the nonsense. Because if you don't cut out the nonsense, This is going to be a Chorban. What did Yoyakim do with the Kina, with Megillah Seicha? He took it and put it into the fire. That is a chutzpah noir. That is a horrible, horrible event in Jewish history. What did Hashem tell Yirmiyah to do? Write it again! Write Eich again. Not only write it again, write a revised second edition. And this time include Perek Gimel. Perek Gimel is very long, very complicated, and this Kina dwells upon Perek Gimel. So the whole Kina is pretty much about a response to the chutzpah of the Malchus in destroying Megillas Eicha. One of the unique things about this Kina, it says each letter of that, each pasuk in that perek is basically repeated twice. Each letter of the Aleph Beis, it is repeated three times. You see over here, Eicha Ashba, there's Eicha Ashba, Ani Agever, Esa, and Otz. Follow along in the Kina, you see the three words. The three words of it repeats each letter. There are three different lines for each letter. Look at the base. The base begins Bochoy Sifke. That's one line. The second line is Bila Vayis. The third line is Bnei Vitni. And like that, we go through all the letters of the Aleph Beis. We repeat them twice, and then we end off with why three. The reason why we repeat it three times is V'achut ha-mishulosh loy b'mehera yinatek. The melech, you think you can burn Eicha? You think you can break away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You cannot escape Hashem. V'achut ha-mishulosh loy b'mehera yinatek. Kina Tezayin is a very important Kina. It's like the Maggid. Now you can divide up all the Kinas into different simonim of the Seder. Kina Zayin is like the Maggid of the Seder. It tells you the story. It tells you in detail what happened when Tita Sarasha came in to destroy the Beis Hamikdash. Zichor Asher Osot Tsar Bifinim. Remember what the enemy did inside of the Beis Hamikdash. Sholaf Harbo, he drew his sword of Val Lefnai Velefnim. He did horrible things, and it mentions that he stabbed the Poroites. It mentions that he contaminated Lechem upon him. In this Kina, we also make mention of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had Rachmanis upon us and left over for us the Koisel Hamaravi has been preserved. And the end of the Kina tells us about the children. There were 400 children that were taken on ships, on three ships. Sorry?
The girls were 300.
300 and 300. Okay, I'm sorry. 300 and 300? Could be. You're right. The end of the Kina discusses the children. There were two different ships. There were the boys and the girls that were taken over here in the article. It says, give me one moment. Here it is. V'shalchum bi'eretz utz b'shalosh sefinais. Okay, it's based on the Gemara Masechta Gittin that tells that he filled three galleys, 400 of the finest youths of Jerusalem. So it says over here there were 400 children, including both boys and girls. And these boys and girls were divided in different ships, or maybe on the same ship, not exactly so clear, maybe the same ships. And when they came to realize the only reason why they'd been taken away was because they were going to be used to do Averos when they arrived in Rome, the girls, they decided it would be better for them to give up their lives to Hashem than to be used as the object of sin. And they threw themselves overboard. The boys made a kal v'chomer, they were inspired by the behavior of the girls, and they also, they give up their lives. They first clarified halachically if it's correct to do, and they likewise, they gave up their lives, they jumped off the ship, they died, al-kiddush Hashem, in order they should not be an object of Avera. We conclude this Kina with the incredible sanctity of the children, that the children had such sanctity when they realized what was happening to them, they would be objects of a sin, they willingly, voluntarily gave up their lives in honor of Hashem. Those are the three major themes of this Kina. Kina Yitzayin discusses the death of children. The background is Asalia. Asalia was the queen of the Malchus of Yehuda. She was a meshugana, to say the least. A crazy woman. She murdered all of her children, all of the descendants of the Malchus based up because she wanted total power. She was afraid someone would challenge her power, so she wiped out every living descendant of the Malchus of David, except for one. There was one that escaped her, and that was Yoash. Yoash was an infant. Yehoyada HaKohen secretly hid Yoash, the last living descendant of the Malchus of David, in the attic of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He lived there for 6 years. In the meantime, Yehoyada organized a rebellion, a kesher, a coup to overthrow Asalia. And after 6 years, they carried out, they executed their plan, and they successfully removed Asalia from her throne, and they killed her. She was executed. And then they brought out the new melech, the 6-year-old boy, Yoash. And Yehoyada, the Kohen Gadol, raised him, he taught him, he educated him, and ultimately Yehoyada died. And Yehoyada was given the greatest honor possibly of any Kohen Gadol ever had, and maybe even more than the kings. They buried him in the burial vault of the kings in recognition of what he has done for Klal Yisrael. He saved the Malchus of David. He raised the king. What he has done, Klal Yisrael, they owed him. They owed him a debt of gratitude. And this Yehoyada had a child by the name of Zechariah. Zechariah ben Yehoyada. And Zechariah ben Yehoyada, in his lifetime, he witnessed Avodah Zarah. Yoash turned sour. And he started worshipping himself. And there was terrible sins that were taking place. And Yehoyada, Zechariah became the Kohen Gadol. And it was Shabbos, it was Yom Kippur. It was in the Beis HaMikdash. He delivered a sermon, a fiery sermon telling the Jewish people to cut out the nonsense. And the people said, enough of this guy already. Enough of this guy. And they sent a message to the king, Yoash. Yoash, Zechariah is such an annoyance. Will you please give us permission to have him eliminated? And Yoash said, yes, go right ahead. And they stoned him and they murdered and executed him. His blood bubbled for 250 years until the Churban, when the Zardan saw the blood bubbling, and this goes to another king later on, there the story is related to another king later on, the blood was bubbling, and he wanted to know the secret behind this blood, and he made an investigation. Ultimately, he discovered the secret, and he murdered almost a million children, a million of the best of Klal Yisrael to appease the blood of Zechariah ben Yehoyada. The Python here says something extremely frightening. The Kalir says, who is this person, Zechariah? Klal Yisrael did a terrible aver by killing him. Shabbos, Yom Kippur, the Beis HaMikdash, the Musar, the Kohen Gadol. But you know something, that's not why Hashem is angry. Do you know why Hashem is angry? It's because this is the child of the person who did for you a chesed. If someone does for you a chesed, you don't treat their children like a piece of garbage. How do you repay kindness to a person? Well, what does the person enjoy? Does he enjoy a good steak? Does he enjoy a nice electronical device? You know what people really care about in this world? They don't care about toys, food, kavod. You know what they really care about? Their children. And the greatest way you can show hakaras hatoiv to a person who did you a chesed is to be good to his children. That's the ultimate hakaras hatoiv. Yehoyada did for Klal Yisrael incredible chesed. And how did Klal Yisrael repay that chesed? They took his child for no good reason. They murdered him in cold blood. The Kalir writes, so if you have a question as to why your children are suffering and why your children are being eaten alive, are being eaten by their mothers, and why people are dragging them by their payas, and why they're starving to death, their bellies are swollen. It's because Mida Keneged Mida. Did you care for someone else's child? Especially a person who, for whom you have a debt of gratitude? No. So that is why your children at the time of the Churban have to suffer such a horrible death. The entire kingdom, the folk at all different ages, all different types of children, of infants, toddlers, adolescents, young men, children. And it's explicit. Nida Keneged Mida. Can you imagine saying this today to a person in our generation? Impossible to say such thing. You would be removed from the face of the earth to tell a person why a child suffers. It's an impossibility. But this was written in different times. This is time of the Nevi'im. This is the time of the Churban we're dealing over here in the Nevi'im, where the Nevi'im, they tell people why they suffer. Okay, it's so foreign to us that we should have such a possibility to understand how, why, a reason why it's something harmful. But that's what it says over here. I'm not making this up. That's what it says over in the Kina. This is what the Kina says. The reason why the children suffer is Mida Keneged Mida. Okay, let's do one or two more, and then we're going to stop it tomorrow. We're not going to learn tomorrow. What we're going to do is we're not going to learn Navi tomorrow. Tomorrow for an hour we're going to learn. We're going to finish up whatever we can do with the Kina. So we want to go over the Kina Chav Ches, word by word, and then we'll learn a little Chumash, or maybe not. We'll see. Tomorrow we're going to finish. Let me just do one more Kina now. And tomorrow we're just going to devote the day to learning Kinois and to learning a little bit of the Parasha Dvarim and Yonei Tisha B'Av. But let's just do a little bit more moments very quickly. Kina Yud Ches. What's Kina Yud Ches? Kina Yud Ches discusses. The ato amarta heitev etev imach v'niflinu ani v'amach v'lama. But we're asking questions. Again, we're asking questions over here. V'lo v'niyal l'chilu shemach v'loy shafachta. We ask a question. The whole kina, now here's a bit of a difference over here. In this kina, we become a bit more chutzpah in this kina. If you pay close attention to the kina, so you notice there's a shift. It's a very important idea. When the kinas begin, it's very abstract. It's very abstract. We don't want to address Hashem directly. We say v'loy, first akina, we mention what happened. Second kina, v'loy zocharta, you didn't remember. We're very indirect. We don't go take Hashem by his lapels and shake him and say, "What in the world are you doing? Who would have the chutzpah?" You don't go over to the Ribbono Shel Olam, you pick him up and say, "What are you doing? What's going on over here?" You don't do that to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We start off very gently. Churban, Shiloi, Noi V'Givoin, very delicate. Ribbono Shel Olam, V'Loi Zacharta, you didn't remember. What happened, Hashem, to the Kois? We mention, Lama Lonetzach, we're very delicate. This kina, we get very nasty. It's a nasty kina. You, Hashem, are guilty. V'ata omarta. It was you who said, Heitev eitev imach, v'niflinu ani v'amach. V'lama. Why did you do this? V'lama b'nei v'lial chilu shemach. It's murdering a chutzpah. But that's what happens when you lose your mind. You start off very nice and pleasant, and the more the kinos go on, the more misery seeps into your blood, the more you lose control. Okay, I used to go to a class for rabbinic training. There were 2-hour sessions. They brought in the best rabbanim in America to give these lectures. And every single lecture was exactly the same. The rabbi comes in, buttons his suit, tie, and he's giving like a sermon. Everyone had their specialty. One was a specialist in kashrus. One is a specialty in end of life services. One has a specialty in how to give a drasha, homiletics. And they all come and they all see a group of rabbis in training. And all rabbis are training, and they give their drasha. And they got to talk for 2 hours. They're used to talking for 7 minutes in their shul. They talk more than 7 minutes, then they don't get their contract renewed. And here the rabbi can talk for 2 hours. Wow, rabbi, 2 hours. But the rabbis are not trained to talk for 2 hours. They're only trained to talk for 7 minutes. So they start talking, very proper. Every single rabbi was the same. Very proper. They start talking. And then as their talk goes on, they loosen up. And by the end of their two-hour drasha about talking about the rabbonus, they are so frustrated. And they're telling us how much they hate their balabatim. And their balabatim, how wicked they are. And all of the frustrations they have in their life, how it affects the shalom bayis and their children, and the rabbis is the worst profession you can possibly go into. And what are you all doing here? All the rabbanim, by the time they finished their drashas, they were all worked up about their profession like you've never seen, some more than others. That's really what happens over here. When you get to Kina Yitches, you're already burnt out, and you already become very, very angry. And very, very nasty. And you say to Hashem, you're guilty, Hashem. Atah. These are very harsh words. Atah, v'lama. There's a very beautiful expression. Kina Yutes is Tzidik Adin. Tzidik Adin. L'cha Hashem Atztak. We now come around. After we've got to the most near, we've reached, the climax really is Yutches. We've reached the peak of Chutzpah. So there's a lot of psychology going on. Now it's time to accept. Okay, we're very delicate. Then we got a little more. We got more and more mechutzif. We let it out, and now, okay, let's come now and accept reality. Lecha Hashem hatzdaka, tzidok hadin, a whole kina tzidok hadin v'lo nevoish apanim, kina chaf. The last thing we'll do right now is also, basically, this is really a tribute to Daniel Ish Chamudos. Daniel, it's a little bit of a shift now. It's really, Kina Chaf really begins a whole new section to a degree. But we begin with Daniel, and Daniel, there are two things to know about this Kina. Number one is this Kina is Daniel is saying, Ribbono Shel Olam, they've insulted us. The Umay Sa'olam, they treat us like a piece of garbage. So forget about us. Forget about our personal suffering. How do you allow the goyim, these mishugoyim out there, to behave the way they insult us? The very powerful kinar of Soloveitchik, who is the master, the undisputed master of the kinois. You have to read his sefarim, what they've published in his name from his shiurim in Boston on Tisha B'Av. He is the undisputed master of the kinois. He writes, he talks, he doesn't really delve into it. He writes, he doesn't have time, but he says that this kina basically is written 100% in response to Christian theology. This is, if you take a course in Christianity and you did not study this kina, then you get an F for the course. Because this in this kina, it expresses the entire theology of Christianity better than they know it themselves. Okay, whoever wrote this in the Kalir, I think it could be the Kalir wrote this kina. I'm not even sure who wrote this kina. The Kalir wrote this kina, it says. So the Kalir, when did he live? Did he know about Christianity? Did he write the Derech Nevuah? Who knows? But the experts have told us, which I really haven't studied, that if you study this kina, you will know the theology of Christianity better than the Pope. And not only will you know it better than the Pope himself, you'll know the response. You will know the flaws. You will know how corrupt and harmful the theology of Christianity is. This is the kina to respond to Christianity. And that pretty much is the kina. Then Chaf Aleph begins a different section where we begin to describe events. Asarugim Malchus, we describe the Crusades. We describe the positive things, the longing for Tzion, which we're going to mention do tomorrow. And tomorrow also, we have to go over one kina line by line, the best kina of them all, the one that really is just awesome, out of the ballpark home run. If you could say such a thing about kinas, and that is kina Chaf Ches. Kina Chaf Ches is a masterpiece which we can relate to. Have a wonderful day. Don't get too depressed.